Hey everybody, I'm Jay Worthy and this is the podcast for anyone trying to inject some adventure, purpose and balance into their lives. 28 Summers is all about living life adventurously, seizing the moment and optimizing your life. Now my guest today is Krish Patel. Krish is the host of the Tales to Inspire podcast, focused on inspiring others through the power of stories. We discuss his lifelong dream to be a professional footballer, achieving that dream and then it all crashing down around him. He tells us how his materialistic focus on girls and money had to change as he embarked on a journey of purpose to help others take control of their lives. Krish, welcome to the 28 Summers podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I'm pretty excited for this one.
Oh, cheers, Jay. Honestly, I'm so excited as well. Let's see what we delve into.
Well, I think you've got a really interesting story. And so I'm keen to kind of dig right in. But I always like to start, you know, way at the beginning with my guests, because I do think that your childhood experiences are really formative one way or the other, right? So I'd love to know a little bit about kind of young Krish growing up in Bolton. What that life was like. I know you're a footballer and you're passionate about football. Was that everything you did, or were you really adventurous as well?
Yeah, so as a kid, I'm from Bolton, so I've got to promote Bolton if I'm from it. So northwest of England, any tourists out there, anyone not from England, go and visit Bolton first. Not much there, but I'll sell it anyway. And basically, my dream was a football. I wanted to be 4 years old. My first memories on this earth were of me kicking a football. Two things really were big struggles for me. I'm half Indian, as you can see, obviously, but obviously audio people listening won't know that half Indian, half English. So people would be racist towards me. From 5 years old, people would say, Pakis don't belong here. You should go and belong with your own tribe. And because I'm half English, my mum is blonde hair, blue eyes, white. As a kid, I wished I was white. I couldn't understand why I didn't look like my mum. I hung about with everyone who was white, but I was the one who looked different. And then I was also a really chubby kid. I was really fat. I was a proper porker. So a lot of the difficulties was no one thought I could be a footballer, and the only person who thought I could be was me, to the extent of, you know, those dandelions that float in the sky in the summer and you catch one, you make a wish. I would catch thousands every summer and catch them, make a wish, blow it away. I want to be a professional footballer, world famous, playing for Bolton Wanderers. Now, I know that doesn't really make sense, Bolton Wanderers, but that's kind of what I wanted to do. So adventure, from that age, I never thought of adventure as a starting point. I thought of football. One dream, football, how can I achieve it? And that was my work hard, fit into society, fit in. I realize now when I look back, I was trying to fit in, to use football as one of those things that I could fit in. And then it took me on a hell of an adventure. I have to admit that it took me on a massive adventure. But as a young kid, I don't think I was, I was really one-track minded. Yeah.
And by the way, I get the Bolton Wanderers thing because I grew up most of my time in Norfolk. So for my sins, I'm a Norwich City supporter. So now anybody who's listening who's from the US is completely confused because Bolton and Norwich are not two teams they often hear about. But I think it's really interesting. So do you mind me asking how old you are?
Now I'm 29.
So one of the, I guess, the interesting things is that as a young kind of 4 or 5 year old and then growing up, you know, becoming single track minded about becoming a professional footballer, you know, role modeling is really important. And I guess there weren't many role models that you felt looked like you and that you could aspire to. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, completely. I don't remember anyone who, actually, I don't know anyone, even to this day, who looked like me who'd made it. My dad was my role model in terms of football. He tried to be a professional. He did play professional football as an Indian back in the 70s, but because of racism, basically 6 months and he got released and basically got told the reason he got released is because he stinks of garlic and stuff like that, you know? So like it was that racist in the 70s, and thankfully it's not that bad now. However, if you've got a population of 8% of Asians playing in this country and only 0.02% or whatever the percentage is, it's less than 1% represented in football, there's still something that doesn't quite fit. So it was really, yeah, a really difficult time. Yeah.
I had a, you may not have heard it yet, but I did an interview with Sonny Pitt, who's co-founder of the Black Trail Runners Association recently. And he said something similar. You know, he was very thoughtful about it and went through a similar kind of, you know, take as much of the emotion out of it as you can, which is difficult because it's a really difficult, meaty subject to talk about. But if you just look at the numbers, just look at the percentage of the population that, and he was looking at, you know, black or people of color. And he was saying, if there's 100 people sign up for a trail race, he said, I never, ever see anybody else that looks like me in a trail race. So something's wrong. What are we doing wrong? And he started to talk about things like where the races were promoted, how they were promoted, the type of imagery that was used to promote those races. And do you think that in, I mean, I'm going down a complete rabbit hole here, but just because you brought it up and I'm, you know, I think these are things we have to talk about there. It's important that we talk about them. Why is it not getting any better with professional football, do you think?
This is a real difficult one to jump into, but I'll call people out. And I think that Professional Footballers Association, the PFA, and people who say they want to do stuff, and we'll get into this later, but when I got released, I was getting awards for being one of the Asian footballers when I was a professional. But when I got released, no one was there. If you truly care about, if a mother looks after an ill son, you give that son extra care to get better. The other children don't then get angry that, oh no, mum's helping John out because he's ill. The other children are like, oh great, they need extra care. So surely as a society, as a system, if someone needs extra care, they all say, oh, treat everyone equally. No, that's rubbish. If you treat everyone equally, it will remain the same. Some people need extra care. Some members of society need extra care to get them to where they need to be equal. And I'm afraid like that's where there's a massive systematic change and thought process of people is they just get away, you know what, we treat everyone equal. But actually, no, there's so much more. And they put us all under one banner, BAME, Black, Asian, Mixed Race, and Ethnic Minority. Oh, well, that's like half the world's population. Like, so how are you putting them under one banner? So there's so much, and it's not just football, it's different sports, and it's all sorts, and especially with adventurers as well, and runners, like you just said, there's so much within it. The workplace, corporate spaces that you've worked in, you'll have seen ridiculous amounts that actually probably Asian people do get into that side of things a bit more because of the education we get put through and the fact that our parents are so money orientated. And that's another thing, my parents were very chilled, but I know many Indian side of things where either you become a lawyer, a doctor, or a failure. Right. So there's so much that we can get in, but it has to change from the individual level.
I think that's really articulately put. And I didn't necessarily mean to take us in that into that place. But I do think that it's just so incredibly important for these conversations to be heard. Right. And, you know, I think you said it really well as well that you did go on to kind of realize your dream. So at age 18, you signed for Bury Town, which is, you know, arguably you say against all odds, right? Based on the conversation that we just had, there weren't many role models for you to look up to. Your teachers were telling you you were too fat to become a professional footballer. And then you had all of those barriers in your way just because of your, you know, your ethnicity. And yet you just defied all of the odds. How did you do that, Chris? How did you, without all of those role models that you could look up to and with all of those barriers in your way, how did you go from Chris age 5, I want to be a professional footballer and play for Bolton Wanderers, to signing at 18 for Bury Town? Because that is a remarkable achievement.
Yeah. And you know what's weird is it doesn't feel remarkable. It feels like I failed even to this day. But work hard was the only, my answer to everything was work hard. Like, oh, people are going to be racist. I'll show them because I'll work harder than any other bugger out there. And now I have in my trait, and it's ingrained into me, that the one thing that Krish Patel can bring to the table is no one will ever work harder than me. And where's that come from? The age of 4 or 5 years old, when I was told that I was not good enough, basically. And I tried to fit in. And the only way I could fit in was work harder. So that's how I got to 18. So it wasn't actually a healthy way to go about it, honestly. And it meant that it took me 12 steps what it would take you 2 steps. I didn't admit any of this until I was 27, so 2 years ago. because I didn't want to admit. And people would ask me at 23, oh, have you ever been under like racially abused at football? I would say no. Why? Because I didn't want it to be an excuse for me to get. So only when I realized, you know, I'm not going to be a professional footballer anymore. That side of me is gone. Now I've got a new dream and adventure. Then I can start to be honest and let out everything. So, yeah, that's how I became. And Bury, so it was Bury FC in, so Bury Town are a non-league team, but I play for Bury FC, so they're in the league. So we're basically in League Two. But I was a pro. Even to this day, I was a professional footballer for a year. Compared to most people, I got to play against my dream. I got to play against United, against City, against Paul Scholes, my idols, right? Like, and then part of me is like, what could I have done? You know, what could I? And I hate that because it could have, should have, would have, ifs and buts. You'll never know, so why think about it, right? But it's just part of me saying, you know what? Like, did I miss out on something? And I don't like to put the externals. It's not the blame on the racism. It's not the blame on the fact I got injured. But it led me down a route of the best, one of the most exciting lives, and the fact that I couldn't be a professional footballer in England. So, yeah. And then it comes down to also, Jay, dreams as well, mate. I had one dream, football. Now, when I go into schools, I say, please, like, five dreams on this piece of paper. Write it down now. Because when I lost my one dream, I was lost, mate. Absolutely lost.
And I don't kind of work in schools the way you do, but I also, that really resonates with me, and I think that the danger with one dream is it starts to get interwoven with your identity. So you identify as the person who's striving for that dream. Well, when that dream goes away, either you, and this is just, could just as easily be you achieved it, right? You worked all the time, you get to your dream, then what? I speak to so many people, I think you do as well, who achieve these amazing things, you know, travel to the South Pole, touch the South Pole. I'm never going to feel that way again because I've just done all the training, I got there. I'm never going to be able to recreate that because it's done. If your identity is woven to that, it's really difficult to unweave it and start to define who you are. It's a little bit like parents sometimes. People become parents and they allow themselves to be identified entirely just as a parent. And then when their kids grow up, and leave home, they don't know who they are anymore, you know, because they're a mum or a dad. And that's why I talk so much about being a dad of four kids and saying, don't lose sight of who you are. Be an amazing dad, definitely be an amazing dad or a mum or whatever. But don't ever lose sight of your identity, because one day they're going to be off doing their thing in the world and you're just going to be left behind and you won't know who you are.
Yeah, completely, completely. And that identity, and we'll talk about this later, is when people ask you like who you are, so you say, what's your name? You'll say Jay Billy, and you'll basically tell them your name. And then they say, oh, what do you do? And that one question, we are defining someone by what they do. And me, I was so proud. Professional footballer. I'm the guy who plays football. And then I went to play in the US. I'm the guy who still plays football. When that went, and I eventually, 27, 26 years old, I'm working at Starbucks serving people coffee. Oh, Chris, oh, yeah, I'm Chris Patel. What do you do? Boom. How do I feel now? Now do I tell them the truth? I'm Chris Patel and I'm working at Starbucks serving people coffee. Or do I lie? Or I even got to the point that I'm serving people coffee, but it's just because then I would justify, but it's just for a temporary amount of time, as if that was a bad thing. Completely. So I now start to ask, I don't really say, what do you do? I say, like, what's your name? And like, how are you doing? Or how are you? And then we just go from there instead of defining people.
I'm smiling so much because it's so similar. I that's exactly how I ended up. I started to realize that we're so work-centric as a society that we do ask people what they do. And then when you're answering that question, you may or may not be embarrassed, right? And often we start to pre-qualify, right? Have you ever heard people say, I'm sure you've had this, where people will be like, oh, my job's really boring, before they've even told you what they do. So we're in just like this, you're already in this negative conversation about them trying to defend or distract you from the thing that they do. So one of the things I started asking people is, what's your name? Where are you from? What makes you most happy? I think that's a really interesting question to ask people, because they'll talk about stuff that they don't even necessarily consciously think about, like their kids, or, you know, they've just taken up paddle boarding, or they love to draw. But it's also quite a disarming question because people are like, oh, I'm not used to being asked that question.
Yeah, I'm going to steal that right off you, Jay. Cheers, mate.
Yeah, do it. Yeah, it's not copyrighted. But wouldn't it be, I think you're going to totally, jive with this, but wouldn't it be such a happier world if we started to approach things like that, if we showed genuine interest in people instead of asking what they do for a living to pay their bills, what makes you happy? I just think it's such a nicer question.
It completely is. However, if you look at the educational system, we are taught that, and I can go on a whole weeks long rant about this, but we're taught that you need to get a job so you can earn as much money as possible so you can be happy and have a comfortable life with your family. So it actually makes sense. Oh, what do you do? Because that's what we've been taught. Like, what do you do so that you can earn enough money to live the life that's happiness, which is this, as if we're born to live, to have as many kids as possible and live this comfortable life, this fairy tale. But actually, it's all ingrained instead of actually saying just the preciousness of life is living it.
Amen. And I'm starting to feel like we need like a Jay and Chris show or Chris and Jay show. a regular spot, just putting the world to rights, because you're so right. One of the things I've always wanted to do is write a book. And I actually, in the end, when my daughter turned 14, I wrote a book for her, just for her, and all my other kids will get it. I'm not going to publish it. And it's just like trial and error, my life, the things I've got right, the things I've got wrong, and maybe it'll help them. And one of the things I talked about there was just I'm sorry to anybody who does careers advice in schools, but broadly, all the careers advisors I've ever experienced, it's very academically focused and it's very vocationally focused. And I always think, imagine what my life might have been like. I'm very, very fortunate to have had an amazing career and have done very well out of that. And I've got a beautiful family and I met my wife through work. So you got to say that I've had a great life, very fortunate. But imagine what my life might have been like. I still believe I would have met her and had all the kids. But imagine what my life might have been like if the careers advisor, instead of said, oh, what subjects you get the best grades in, said to me, what makes your heart sing? Like, what do you do when you're doing something that you forget that you're doing it because you love it so much? Okay, wouldn't that be an amazing question to be asked?
Yeah, but it makes people's jobs harder for the careers advisor, because then you've got I can't just say go in that direction. You can, how do I put someone in a place where there's no place that's built for them? And that's where we start to then start, people start to be, go against the system instead of actually the system should just be built for uniqueness. So yeah, I feel like we're trying to fit into something. And how many round, like square pegs have we fit into round holes over the years? And they've lived their entire lives like that. And then you get to the point of death. And my sister works with palliative care, so she works with end of life. And I speak to other people who work with end of life. And I've met people on death's door. And the worst thing in life is getting to the end, to that point, and knowing they've not lived their life the way they wanted to. And sometimes you don't see that until you get to that point. And obviously, sometimes we need a wake-up call, which hopefully COVID is. But yeah, it's really, really important. And I know we got deep and straight into it, like, mate. But it is. These are important things because often we're blinded.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, I say it all the time, and I don't apologize for it because I'm really proud to be a dad. But as a dad, or as a parent in general, you start to really zero in on these things. I know you work a lot with kids as well. And so you become very aware of these things, right? Because you start to realize what the system is doing. I see it already. And I think it's so important to make sure that we kind of really focus on what makes our children happy. And allow them to explore and find the boundaries of their joy and not worry so much. So I'll give you an example. My eldest daughter is, I'm supposed to be interviewing you, sorry about this, but my eldest daughter is 14. And she didn't know what she wanted to do and she was getting really stressed about it. My wife and I sat down with her, we talked through, we said, what do you love doing? And we discovered that she had loved being doing acting and dance and drama, and she stopped doing all of that when she was younger. And she said, well, it's too late for me now. Because all the girls that are my age that are going to go for all the university places to be an actress have been doing it all the time since they were three, and I'm so far behind. And we were like, well, you know, like you said, Chris, if you're prepared to work hard, it's never too late. You're only 13. And now she's like right in it. She's doing amazingly well. She's doing all of her Lambda exams and she's following her dream. She said to me even the other day, well, maybe I'll do a teaching degree as well, because if it doesn't work out, I can be a teacher. I'm like, okay, it's good to have plan B, but don't stress about how you're going to make money so much now. Just focus on your craft and doing what you love. And, you know, let's see where it goes. Just try and take that pressure away from, you've got to have a house, you've got to have a mortgage, you've got to have a pension. Like, it's just, I don't know how productive that is.
But it's not like, it's so weird. Is if you didn't have any of that, you would still be alive. Your heart would still be beating. You would still be here living on this earth. We live in the UK, so there would be support for you. Like, so to have a plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E, plan F, that's great. But just to realize, like, you would still be alive and your heart was, you could still have the opportunity to change the moment. So then actually, like, what's the fear? Like, and I have this fear. I'm no guru. I have to admit, like, what I say to today, if I learn something tomorrow, next week you do the same interview, it could be completely different. Because I really, Krish now, in a year's time, better not be the same Krish. I'll be furious with myself. Like, absolutely furious with myself. And it's really just saying that, like, how do I, it's a mindset, mate. It really is a mindset, but live in this mindset. And creating a community with it as well. How do you create your environment about it?
Yeah, I think that's so powerful. And kind of getting back to your story a little bit, I think, you know, what you just said there is perfect, because, you know, what you're saying in reality is, first of all, it's never too late. It doesn't matter what age you are. You could be, you know, I don't know if you ever heard of the guy David Lemon, who walked the Zambezi River when he was 60. Amazing, right? It's never too late. It's never too late. And, you know, Captain Tom raising all that money during COVID. There's incredible examples of people really late on in their life saying, I'm going to do something meaningful and special. And so at any point in your life, you can say, I don't like the trajectory, right? I'm going to change things. And, you know, in shipping terms, a minor couple of degrees course correct can be huge in terms of the destination you end up at, right? So for you, Barry FC didn't quite work out. And then you got the opportunity to go on a scholarship in California, right? And so I think I've heard you talk about this before, and I it was kind of funny to listen to in a way. I know it was a really meaningful part of your life, but because you were in that kind of materialistic, nice cars, girls, you heard California, you were like, I'm in, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically, and this is where the true, because I'm 29, right? And I'm not like, I don't really know many people my age doing what I do. But at that point, at 18 years old, girls, cars, money is what I cared about. Now, I have to caveat this. I didn't have girls, cars, money. That's what I cared. That's what I cared about. They're the things I cared about. I didn't have any of it. But that's the superficial, trying to fit in to be a footballer. That's part of fitting in. And the society you live in, they're the things you then care about. And that was my happiness. So at 18, when I was a professional footballer, going up to 19, and I started going to the casino every day because I was injured. All my friends were at university. And I started, you know what I'm going to do? 12 till 2, 12 till 3 every day, I'd be playing poker, Monday to Friday. I'm not even wasting big money, wasting time, to the extent that I would get in my car and I would drive and I wouldn't even have a destination. And I would do that regularly. And that's kind of how my life was. I didn't have a destination. I had no foundation, no direction that you talked about before. I was just like a feather floating in the sky. Which way was the wind going to push me? So I had no idea who I was. Then I got released. And then my whole world came tumbling down because you get told, not even you get told, you believe you matter. And then you get told, and then you get released, and then you realize you don't matter. To the system that supported you. And they put all that work in. I was at Bury since I was 12, 13 years old. Now at 19, they released me, not heard a word since. Since I got released, not heard a single word from them ever since. And, you know, I mean, that kind of, that doesn't hurt, but where's the well-being of the player? And then I got an offer to go to the US. I dropped out of school when I was 16 to play football. So I had no education. And I was living on my mum and dad's crappy yellow sofa. And basically, email came through. Do you want to go and play in California? Full ride scholarship, close to the beach, living in a mansion, great facilities. And I was like, American Pie was a picture in my head, mate. And I was like, mum, dad, California is that direction. I am off, sin a bit. And turned up, like, basically left. I didn't even close the door behind me. My mum and dad were very supportive. I turned up in California and was quickly realized it wasn't what I thought it would be. So California, I was in, I thought I was going to LA, close to the beach. I was 12 hours. I was in North California, 12 hours from the beach in a small town called Susanville. Minus 20 degrees in the winter, living in a 3-bedroom house with 13 other guys. We had 55 players in our team for a 23-man squad. So the coach had lied to a bunch of players from all over the world who'd spent money to get there. My scholarship was lied to. Didn't have one. The facilities, we were playing on a baseball field. Now, bear in mind, I was playing against Manchester United a year ago. Now I'm in Susanville, kind of like, I'm getting lied to like this. And then Susanville's home to three prisons. Now there's 15,000 people in the population. 4,500 of that population are in a maximum security prison. Murderers and rapists throughout the whole of California in that prison. Then there's also a medium security prison with another 4,000. And then a juvenile delinquency prison, a kid's prison, for the 500. So about 9,500 people out of the 15,000 in the town are actually inside of the prison. So now you're starting to get a feeling of this is one depressing place. Everyone works in the prison who's living in the town anyway. And it's 2 hours to get to the nearest town, which is Reno, Nevada. So Walmart was our trip out. Girls, cars, money is what I cared about. I'd been lied to. I was furious with the coach. Furious. Like, couldn't stand him. And it was just that there was one guy. And this is one person could change my life. And he was always happy. He was called Gabby from Brazil. Always happy. He was like, bro, never give up. I hated Gabby with a vengeance. I couldn't stand him. What's he got to be happy about? Why is his head in the clouds? Like, is this guy deluded? These are the questions I'd ask myself about Gabby. And to the point when I say, Gabby, stay away from me. And Gabby was living in a basement. He wasn't in the starting team. And he hardly spoke any English. And like one day I said to Gabby, I'm going back to Bolton. And he said two things. One of them was, if you keep running away from your obstacles, you're never going to overcome anything in your life. And I was like, I knew he was right because I'd run away from my struggles in Bolton, feeling lonely, not knowing who I was. And then I was doing the same in California. So was I just going to keep running away from all my struggles? He also introduced me to Buddhism. I was the least religious person in the world, officially, to the extent that when he said, come to a Buddhist meeting, I said, screw your Buddha, screw your God. I don't care about any of that stuff. And then he said, free food, a student in California, no money. I was like, all right, I'll come to your Buddhist meeting for a bit of free. And they started talking about life. They started talking about philosophies of solutions instead of problems. It opened my eyes. I now practice Nietzschean Buddhism, and it's opened my eyes to a whole new world of the potential that exists within every single person. Gabby saw the potential in me when I didn't see the potential in me. Took me under his wing, stayed in California for 2 years. And what Gabby did for me, I started to do in little ways to help others, little things. Encouraging people who were struggling with their mental health, and it made me feel good. That feeling was way better than the girls, the cars, the money. Like, it was the feeling of actually this is what life's about. And then I graduated. I moved to Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama, of all places. So I spoke to Dave Cornthwaite about this. I don't know if you know Dave, but spoke to him just recently about Montgomery, and he does a lot of stuff in the South with his adventuring. But Montgomery is where Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, the first black vote in America, all this like civil rights movement began. But I saw massive, massive racial divide, massive. And people were like, Chris, you're going backwards. Why would anyone go there? I'd overcome my hell. My hell was Susanville. I'd overcome it. Bring on the next one. I was invincible now. And you, once you spark, ignite your engine, nothing is better. Like, what's going to stop you if you've got an engine that, like, self-sufficient? What's going to... The hardest thing is igniting it and realizing you have an engine that can take you any direction you want to go. That's beautiful. And yeah, graduated in 2016 with a degree in business, but it had all been about me. And then I realized that it's not the Chris show. There's a big world out there. And if I can Facebook message someone across the world, why can't I help someone? That was my theory. And that was my massive transformation, really. And that goes really to the next stage of going away from football to really doing what I do now, really, and then going to Africa and doing all these crazy challenges and helping people, really.
That's an amazing story. I love it. Well, keep going. I'd love to hear more, because I know, you know, in 2016, you created the Road to Uganda. So was that the first big kind of charity challenge that you did?
Yeah, it was. So 2016, graduated. I was training in Montgomery, Alabama. The Road to Uganda is what I created. I was 24 years old at the time. And I said I was going to run 4 marathons in 4 days from the northwest of England to the northeast, so coast to coast, starting in Workington, finishing Seaham. And I'd call it the Road to Uganda. I'd go to Uganda and I would build something sustainable, right? So there's a few things people would really call me out on here is you'd run 4 marathons in 4 days and they'd like, Chris, you've never run a marathon. And I was like, and what? I'll just train for it. And you're going to Africa, you're going to Uganda. Oh, you've been to Uganda before, have you? No, I've never been to Africa in my entire life. Like, no. Where's the money going to, Chris? And I'd be like, I've got an answer for that one. It's going to something sustainable. And they'd be like, what does that even mean? Like what? Like, so, and I didn't know where the money was going to because I'd never been to Africa. I'd never been to Uganda. I'd never started volunteering. I just knew that I had a determination and not a plan. My plan was very put in pencil. And I think put your plans in pencil, not in pen. And I think that's so important. Because when you put your plans in pencil, they can adapt in any direction. And for me, I penned my life out. As a footballer, I never wanted to go to America. I was going to stay in the UK, play in the Premier League, get the hottest girl, live a comfortable life, biggest house, great cars, get drunk every other weekend with my mates. And basically, that was my penned-in life. Now, screw that. So, went to Uganda 2017, ran the 4 marathons, 150 miles, 4 days, went to Uganda volunteering, homeless children in an orphanage, coaching football with women's empowerment, with disabled children. I was there for 3 weeks because I had to get back to the USA where my visa was. There for 3 weeks. No one knew I'd raise this money in Uganda. And it was unbelievable. It opened my eyes to a whole new world. And I realized when I was there that there was a building at one of the schools I was working at. There was a space and there was all these children in the village not going to school. I started to say to the headmaster, Peter, I said, Peter, why aren't these children coming to your school? And he said, look, it's really hot in the summer and then it rains a lot when it rains. So we have to have, for the protection of the children, a building. And they had space. And they said, look, we've got the teachers ready to go. We just don't have the building. And I was like, boom, that's where the money, something sustainable. Every single term to this day, we educate 150 children, help educate 150 children to this term with the Road to Uganda. So that took a year. The other thing that people said to me is, Chris, you're going to trust a Ugandan person who's never had money with X amount of money. And I was like, I'm going to see the potential in them. Like Gabby said, saw the potential in me. And if I get screwed over, I get screwed over. But I'm not even going to contemplate that. I'm going to see the potential in that person. And they're going to see what it looks like when someone believes truly in them. And that's what I did. And I gave that money to one person that I built this connection with in 3 weeks. Built this connection with, and basically we got all of that off the ground. I would leave the house at 7 in the morning. I would come back at like 12:30, 1 o'clock the next morning. In 3 weeks, people would say to me, you did what volunteers would do in 3 years. And now I live the philosophy of, I'm going to live 100 years worth of life in one single year. I might not live a long life, but I'm going to live a freaking fulfilled life. So that's kind of how I I have the philosophy, but it was my first thing, helping others. And then I came back to the US, tried to go back to the US 2018, and my visa got rejected. Couldn't get into the country. Their reason was you don't have enough money, a mortgage, a wife to come back to the UK. So I was a high risk to remain in the US, despite my car being there, my clothes, my last 6 years of my life, I paid my taxes, everything. So I found myself in 2018 on my mum and dad's crappy yellow sofa, back where I was in 2012, feeling depressed, feeling lonely, I applied for 250 jobs, couldn't get a job. And that's where I started working at Starbucks, serving people coffee. And I questioned life. I really questioned life. I look in my diary now and I would write in my diary around that time, like, what is the reason for me being on this earth? Why is it all I wanted to do was help people? Why was that so hard? Like, if I'd said all I want to be is a millionaire, I reckon I would have had 20 mates, newfound mates, there to help me get to that point. But because I said all I want to do is help people, like, it was a lonely journey. And it has been a lonely journey up until this day. A really lonely journey. Because you're fighting a battle that the system, the society, either don't want you to do or don't understand. And I get it. I completely get it, because that was me. If I carried with my football journey, I wouldn't give a fuck about me. I wouldn't care about me. You know? So that brought the Uganda back in Manchester, went into Manchester in 2018, homeless people everywhere. And I was shocked. I didn't think it existed as much. Like, I'd just been to Africa and then I'm in Manchester and there's so many homeless people, but I'm very curious. And I have to admit, curiosity is something that I would always recommend. Like, basically what we should do as adults is just be a child. That's really what we should be, because curiosity, adventure, courage, a child has so much courage. They do things and they fail. But as an adult, we refuse to do things because we may fail.
Completely agree with that. And I think, you know, when you talked about the people not necessarily understanding what you're doing, when you say you want to help people, I think that is often not people meaning to be difficult or unsupportive. It's them projecting their fears onto you. And it's driven by, you know, we lose it over the years. We start off as children, we're curious about everything. My youngest is nearly just coming up on two. And he'll keep climbing stuff until you take him down. And, you know, he just wants to experience the world and he's trying new things. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. And as we get older, we seem to lose that. And I think, you know, I too believe that a big part of the secret to being living a happy, fulfilled life is regaining that childlike curiosity that you had when you were younger. Because then you once again become fascinated and in awe of the world. You know, when did we go for a walk and stop being amazed by the trees and the birds and the sounds? When we were on autopilot and we were just going out for a walk because we're trying to be healthy rather than because we just want to be present in the landscape, you know? So I think that's all linked together, that idea of just being curious and exploring the world. And we can do it at any age. We just need to learn how to do it again.
Mate, I love that. And like you said, at any age. It's a spirit. It's a spirit. It's a youthful spirit. That, have you ever seen someone, and it works both ways, that you've seen them, they're 85 years old and they're doing a degree, or they've just started learning skiing. I've got a friend, Lloyd, in the US in Lake Tahoe, and he came in and one day and he said, guys, I've learned how to ski. And now I'm learning how to ski. And I said, Lloyd, you're 79 years old. Like, you can hardly walk, never mind ski. And he goes, like, youthful spirits exist no matter what. Like, and I was like, youthful spirits exist no matter what. Like, it's still there. He's igniting his youthful spirit. And who am I to say, no, don't do it? And it's so amazing when you see that youthful spirit but then adversely, you get people who are 19, 25, or in their youth, and they're, oh no, I'm past it. I'm too old for that. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Like, you know, and you're like, mate, you're 19. Like most millionaires and people who are successful don't become successful until their 50s. So Like, if, but I do this instant gratification. I'm a millennial. I want to be successful, and I want to be successful yesterday. So I really struggle with, like, but taking the journey and actually seeing that, look, in my 50s, my 60s, my 70s is probably where the causes that I've made, the effect will show. So the true effects. So it's really making sure you know that you're going towards that.
I think that's spot on. And you know, your friend who learned to ski, I think is the perfect illustration. One of the things that I always say or talk about is, you know, be careful of autopilot. Like, be aware and be mindful of the times in your life where you're flipping into autopilot, because that is where you're just cruising and you're just letting life blow by you. You know, you're like on the motorway and the landscape's all blurry. You're not taking anything in. You're not present, and you're going to miss amazing opportunities when you slow down, pay attention, and be more present. Opportunities are all around you. And so I think that in terms of advice for my own kids, that's why I say to them, don't, try not to be on autopilot. Try not to just kind of wander around. Sometimes I see my kids, and the one thing they do, which really drives me insane, is they grab their phone and they'll walk down the stairs holding their phone. I'm like, be present. Like, you're walking down the stairs, apart from the fact you may fall downstairs and really hurt yourself because you're staring at your phone. Like, just be present. Just Johnny Wilkinson, who you probably know, one of my favorite all-time rugby players, talks about all of me in every moment. And I absolutely love that. It's like, whatever, if I'm on Instagram, scrolling through Instagram, that's okay. I'm not going to beat people up for it. I do it, but do that, right? Don't be eating your food at the same time. If you're eating food, eat your food, right? I think that there's, and we all don't get it right all of the time, but there's some wonderful lessons in that notion of all of you in every moment.
Yeah, definitely. I just listened to, well, Johnny Wilkinson did a great podcast on the High Performance Podcast I can't remember. And then Will Smith on Jay Shetty's, yeah, Jake Humphries. But then Will Smith just did an incredible podcast with Jay Shetty. And he was talking about being present in the moment. And it's one of the keys to life is being present in that moment, and absorbing the emotion. And I struggle with this myself because I have my protective layers that I've had from childhood that I cut myself off, and then it numbs me. And so it's really trying to bring those emotions out. If you need to cry, cry. If you need to be angry, be angry. But have a vessel, have a place that you can let it all out. Don't put it, protract it onto a person. And this is where spiritual practice, in my opinion, is really important. Some kind of practice that you use, not a you follow, a practice you do. It has to be action-based, that actually is that space for you to develop you, to polish your own mirror. I think that's my space that I really encourage, especially in England. We're very against religion, but we're very for the fad of spirituality. Or we're starting to be more for the spirituality, whether it's just, oh, I put my gratitude list down or whatever it is. But I think that's such a good thing to do. So hopefully that can become a trend on a style or whatever. And it becomes more fashionable.
Yeah. I love the idea of finding that space or that activity that where you're almost like in flow, where then you can think clearly, you've got some space and some distance. And in my own story, you know, I had periods of depression, but one of the things that really helped me get through was going trail running, which is kind of funny because at school I hated running. I was not a gifted long distance. I'm still not a gifted long distance runner, but I absolutely love it. And I love just, you know, no headphones, just going for a run in the woods or in the forest. And just being present. And I do my best thinking there. All my ideas, everything, all the inspiration that I get in terms of ideas for the podcast or anything else, they all come when I'm running, always. And I think that that's because that's my happy place where I can be present, in flow, not distracted. And that's when, you know, I feel at peace.
Yeah. And you may have more than one happy place as well. Like,
yeah, like you, for sure.
You can have many places where you can be in flow and feel. It's like there's a universal energy that exists and it already exists. The question is, are you willing to tap into it? So instead of creating the universal energy yourself, you don't have to. Just get in the frequency. And you're like, there's ways to get into that frequency. And it's really just being present, like you said, silencing yourself, getting into that moment. So yeah, I haven't gone way off what I was thought we were going to talk about today, mate.
I couldn't help going this way though. I think you've got a ton of wisdom already, Krish. You're a humble guy. You've done so much. We didn't really touch on all of the challenges you've done, but something tells me we'll have an opportunity to do that another time. I am curious to know, you know, at 29, what advice you might give 12, 13, 14 year old Krish if you had the opportunity. Would you have any specific advice for a younger you with everything you now know?
I have advice. I don't know whether I would have taken it, because I was such a stubborn, yeah. Even to this day, I'm stubborn, but I'm such a one trap mind person then. But my advice is don't try and fit in, basically. Stop trying to fit into yourself. Realize that life is the reason for living is transformation and not comfort. And if I could have realized that then I would have thrown myself into so much more stuff, because I kind of define myself. But how can you define something that's undefinable? We are undefinable. And the fact that I can judge you, like actually, you don't, like, go the other way around. The fact that you can judge me, others can judge me, I don't even know me half the time. So how can someone judge me if I don't know me? So I'm all, you know, I'm basically, the struggle is always trying to learn about myself. So that would be the one. And courage as well, taking courageous steps and realizing courage isn't this big, macho, huge, you've got as many muscles or going out to war. Courage is taking that very first initial step, you know, being vulnerable. And that is, being vulnerable is bloody hell, that's hard. So hard, and I struggle with that to this day. But that's where I had to be vulnerable with Tales to Inspire, like what I do now. That my dad was like, "How are you going to earn money?" "Don't know, Dad. I've just got to quit my job, and I've got to go full time Tales to Inspire." "What, you're going to share people's stories around the world to encourage people to never give up?" And like, is that even a product, Krish? "Well, no, but I don't know. I know it's my passion, so I've got to go." And it was like I wasn't going to be trapped by how do I earn money? So not being trapped by the loops that society brings as well, or your own family members. And it's done out of their fear. You talked about it before. And it's beautiful concern. It's love from my dad, because he's doing it for the right reasons. But it's just realizing, you know what, sometimes I've got to live my life and not the life that my parents want me to live.
I was listening to the Sarah Williams Tough Girl Challenges podcast recently. I know you've interviewed Sarah, so have I, and she's amazing. And she talks about people just projecting their fears. I think, you know, she's spot on. They don't mean to be unsupportive. And in many cases, they're trying to be supportive, but they're scared for you. And actually, again, Sarah is a real source of inspiration for me, but she posted on her Instagram just this morning that a quote from one of her guests, which was, I think it was from one of her guests, I haven't really dug into it, but basically said, you know, the greatest risk is not taking risks now, it's living your whole life. And you talked perfectly about this earlier, but it's about living your whole life without doing what you love, right? So I, huge credit to you for being brave enough to do what you do. You know, we're both podcast hosts. It's not easy to make money for something like this. You've got your book, and I think you're just spreading an incredible message, which I absolutely love, and I'm so grateful for your time. I am curious before you go to know if you've got you obviously did the road to Uganda, and then you did the huge swimming challenge, which you haven't even talked about yet. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. But have you got any other challenges on the horizon? I think a guy like you is always scheming, so I'm curious to know if you penciled in anything else.
So the challenge side of it is one of the hardest things, because I've only ever done challenges for a reason. I struggle, like I have to admit, once I do a challenge, I'm so depressed afterwards. And it's something I realized after my last one, is that, like you said before, I worked 6 months towards it. I put my all into it. And imagine it's on September the 8th. I need to remember that September the 9th exists. And we do this in work. We do this in all areas of our life. We have a goal. We're working towards something. And you forget that the day after exists. And that's where I really, really struggle. So I knew that I'm doing everything for a cause. So that was my motivation. When things get bloody awful and you're like, how the hell am I going to do it? You can rely on that foundation that you know it's doing for the right reasons, your reason why. So I guess is I'm waiting for a cause really that really touches me, and then the challenge, like swam 53 miles, ran marathons, and I'm not saying I'm a crazy challenge because I'm not. I speak to a lot of people who are do a lot, but it's hard for me. I'm just a Joe Bloggs. I'm not a guy who is an adventurer in quotation marks. You know, like a people who do this for a living. But yeah, I don't know. I would love to do something to do with mountains. I would love to do something to do with the ocean. I'd love to do something to do with kayaking or to do with sailing. I'd love to do something to do with nature. But I just don't know what to do with the cause, and that's where the cause is really important. So yeah, I don't know, mate. I'm blank canvas waiting for a cause, buddy.
I might send you some ideas. So the one thing I will say, which I think is really interesting, you know, you just said I'm not an adventurer, but I would actually say for me, you know, adventure, the definition of an adventurer is something that I think is always evolving. I think we have this quite kind of stereotypical patriarchal society or societal view of what an adventurer is, which is unfortunately typically a gnarly, often male, often white, doing amazing, you know, adventures, climbing mountains, rowing oceans, whatever. But the reality is I speak to adventurers all the time that look like society. They're young, they're old, they're different skin colors. Some are male, some are female, some identify as different genders entirely. And I think that's beautiful. And I want more of that. I want us to show that like adventurers are all around you. When you walk out your front door, you could walk past somebody in the street who you would look at and you'd say, there's no way they're an adventurer. And they did something amazing, either when they were younger or last week, or they're going to do it in their future. And I think that adventurous mindset is all about just being open to the possibility. And for me, you're an adventurer. Everything you've just spent the last hour telling us about, you're an adventurer.
Yeah, actually, that's a... Mate, I stick it on my CV, mate. Get in there. Yes.
Yeah, put it on there.
You know what's weird? Is weird is the times that I felt most adventurous was when I was a kid, and I lived in a rough part of Bolton that I've now lived back in. And people would knock on your door and they say, "He's Christian." And it's 7 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday. My parents would be furious. "Do you want to come and play out?" "Yeah, okay, we'll go and play out." And I wouldn't come back till 10 p.m. that night. My parents would be furious. I'm not coming in for lunch or for tea or any of that. I've missed out on all the activities my family wanted to do because I was out in the woods. Or I was out in the river. Or I was playing football, playing manhunt, doing crazy stuff, right? But my eyes were the unknown. I don't know what today's going to bring. And I don't, but it's an exciting, the unknown. And so that adventure, and you're right, like if I can be, that's true adventure. If you can have that, it's exciting, mate. It's so exciting. So yeah, that's, and if I can live to try to be like that with that spirit of then an adventurer, I'll call myself an adventurer for you, mate.
Do it. I've converted somebody. But listen, look, we're all out of time, but I'm so grateful for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I guess final question, where can people follow you online? Where can they find the podcast?
Yeah, so our podcast is Tales to Inspire, and then our online, www.talestoinspire.com. We share inspirational stories to encourage people to never give up. We're also educational package in schools, which is going really good. And then we also go into the corporate offices, helping people connect to people by the power of their own stories. So yeah, that's kind of where I am online. Social media, Tales to Inspire, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's all done by me. So apologies if there's a letter out of place or a punctuation mark that's not where it should be. But hey ho, happy days, eh? But yeah, Jay, I just want to say, honestly, in this moment, thank you. Sometimes you don't need anything more than a thank you. To have this space and to connect, and I feel like us two are going to be, once you're a friend of mine, mate, you're a friend for life, so you're screwed now, mate. Thank you, mate. Honestly, thank you so much.
Good man. Yeah, it's been an honor. Take care, Chris. Thank you.
I really hope you loved that chat as much as I did.
I will definitely be inviting Chris back on so we can dig into some of his charity challenges a little bit more. But for now, please follow him on Instagram at Tales to Inspire. You really won't be disappointed. Thank you, as always, for your continued support. It really means the world to me that so many of you are taking the time to listen, share, and review the podcast. That's it from me today. I'll be back soon with another amazing guest. In the meantime, stay happy, stay healthy, and remember to live adventurously.